You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who know what it is like to work, live, and minister in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the value of what God does in those places. I am your host, Joe Epley. And today we get to dive into the wonderful world of kids ministry, right? We have Pastor Cody Burnson, who's going to be joining us in a second. And I was just really enjoyed talking through his journey, talking about connecting with students, giving to missions, even talking about his life background and how that's kind of played into how he's loved kids well. And so obviously, anytime you go to a small town, kids are going to be there needing ministry. And we're excited for this conversation. But first, I just want to say, Pastor Cody, how you doing, sir?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, we're excited to dive into your story. The first thing that we do is typically just have people walk through kind of their background in ministry and their connection to the rural church. So why don't you share with us some of your story, where you've been, what you've done, you know, where you're at now?
Sure, yeah. Now, kind of growing up in an unchurched home, I really had no idea what ministry was, or it wasn't even a thing that entered in my mind as a potential future to me and being where I was. The concept of God, and let alone someone else having a calling on my life, was such a foreign concept to me that it never entered my mind until after I got saved later in life when I was about 17. Now, I didn't start serving in kids ministry until I was about 18 or 19. And this was, I believe, before I had started attending a discipleship program that was actually based out of the church that I got saved at. But anyway, so I started serving in this ministry, and at first mainly kind of helped with media stuff, and somehow, which for a reason I don't know how or why, the kids pastor that I served with, she saw something in me that she continued to develop me and mentor me in those areas, and giving me more increased responsibilities. And so over time, I got more involved with that. Now, that all sort of leads me into accepting my first ministry position in Sublette, Kansas in February of 2014, which was after about a 6 or so month waiting period where I wasn't really sure what I was going to be doing or what was going to happen next. Now, Sublette, it's about kind of as rural in my mind as you can get with a population of about a little over 1,400.
And there you go.
Where to this day, the biggest restaurant they have is the Subway attached to the truck stop.
Oh, man. There are certain stereotypes that just like fulfill me every time they come up. And if you're talking about your biggest restaurant is a truck stop Subway, I'm like, that's a joke. That's a punchline. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's a rural town. And there it is.
Yep. Yeah. Now, during my time there, I was able to get pretty connected with the local school district, doing things from working at the middle school, high school as a special needs para, working at the elementary school after school program. And one of the big things that the church in Sublette that I was at, that we helped facilitate for a long time when I was there, was the supplying school supply drives, or supplying school supplies and backpacks for the entire elementary school. And after spending about 6 years in Sublette, I started my position in Liberal, Kansas in February 2020, which presented itself its own set of challenges. And
for sure.
Now in Liberal, I've been here for about a little over 4 years now. And I think whatever sort of context you find yourself in when it comes to the rural church, and if you're looking to make an impact, really the first thing that I sort of come to is finding that need in the community that isn't being met and starting to think of ways to help meet that need. And it'll look slightly different in each community. And the things I've done in Liberal have been different than what I did in Sublette, but starting to meet a need in that community that isn't being met.
Awesome. I love that. And tell us a little bit about the community of Liberal, Kansas. How big is it? What's the church like? Kind of maybe give us a small snapshot of your kids' ministry.
Yeah. So right now in Liberal, there's, I believe, the population is a little over 10,000 Liberal, so a lot bigger than Sublette was, but still definitely definitely a small town.
For sure. It's still rural.
I mean,
if you have a Kansas tagline, like Kansas tagline, it just counts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, in here in Liberal, I mean, just for me personally, we obviously didn't have a movie theater in Sublette, so we have a small local movie theater. So for me, that is great. I love going to see movies, but the kids, the church as a whole, kind of one of the things that I've noticed here is that we have just a lot of kind of laid back families, a lot of laid back people. I think just kind of fits with the kind of demographics that we have. So, I mean, for me, one of the things I'm both to my benefit and detriment, I'm like, I want to, when something is happening and has a start time, I want to start at a definite start time. But kind of, I've had to adjust that with the culture of just, hey, maybe we'll arrive 10, 15, 20 minutes later or something like that. But overall, the people here are awesome. We are, the church is located just right across from a middle school, and we've been able to just build relationships there, and it's just been an awesome time these last 4 years getting connected with the people of Liberal.
Awesome. I love that. Well, let's dive into different elements of your story. You know, I know when I talked to you on the phone, we love just diving into the strengths of people. You know, why do we do what we do? What are we passionate about, even within our ministry calling? And so you mentioned to me that you really felt like connecting with students, kind of that relational, that intentional relationship building, was kind of a huge strength of yours. And I just want to dive into that, you know, because I think some people might struggle in a small town to build relationships with those kids. So how do you foster that, in your kids' ministry?
Yeah, I looked at that from a few different sort of vantage points of view. For me, during my services, that's been where I've had the least amount of barriers, and it's where building those relationships been it's most easily able to be facilitated. I mean, the kids are they're already there. They're ready to hang out with you and learn about Jesus. And I've just and it's still something I'm learning to do, but learning to use that time wisely you have with your students to get to know them better, build those relationships. We'll be in a much better position to get to know our students, to play and have fun with the students, and to help our students learn more about Jesus and to really pray for our students and going to battle with them in that way. And a lot of the same principles that generally apply when you're trying to just build a relationship with anyone, I think apply when we try to build relationships with our students. We need to listen to them, get to know their story as much as they feel comfortable telling us, finding ways to relate to them, even when whatever avenue you find to further connect with them doesn't make much sense to us at first. Finding those things where you can be like, hey, that thing that you like to do or that thing that you're interested in, let's talk about that. Or let's find some common ground there. And then another thing I would say is equally as important to being intentionally connecting with your students is to be there for them at different moments in their lives, whether they're big moments or small moments. Sometimes we won't really know what our presence at certain events will mean to our students till much later in their lives. But as much as we can, as much as makes sense health-wise for us, but we need to be there and try and be there for our students, whether it's them playing a sport, a dance recital, some other artistic endeavor. Maybe they're getting honored for something at school, or maybe it's something else entirely. Being there when you can, when it makes sense to be there for them in those particular moments. And another way I found is to have lunch with students at school. Obviously, go through the proper channels with the parents and the school staff, but I found kids love that, especially if you're able to offer to bring them food from one of their favorite places. They'll be the cool kid at lunch that day because they have McDonald's or Wendy's or whatever they end up picking. And another way I've found to build relationships with students is to let the kids serve in ministry when they hit a certain age. There are different levels of involvement that this can take and different avenues that it can go in terms of relationship and discipleship building. But at the very least, I found that letting kids serve in aspects of the ministry has been great to build relationships.
Nice. Yeah, I love that comprehensive look. I really love your verbiage when you said be there at the right time when it's kind of expected or right for you to be there. Because like, I do think that's what's so interesting about a rural context is like you can't just bop in and out of stuff all crazy. You really do have to go through the right channels, make sure people know who you are and what you're doing there and why you're there. And but I think when you take advantage of that system well, it can just create some beautiful moments of a relationship building. So thank you for sharing that. So let's dive into another side of ministry here. You mentioned that giving to missions is one of your passions right now. Obviously, in our specific tribe, the Assemblies of God, you know, in kids ministry, we know BGMC, the Boys and Girls Missionary Challenge, is kind of this big missions giving that we do. But just missions giving in general, how do you encourage kids and adults to give to missions, and how do you foster that heart of generosity?
So this passion I have for getting kids and families involved and giving to missions, it's definitely something I'm still developing. And really, it's something I think that really started taking form when I started at my current position here in Liberal. Now, in my current position, I definitely had help in that my church was already kind of really involved in supporting missionaries. But I think that what I did do and what I'm currently doing is definitely possible for anyone to eventually get accomplished. You just might need to jump through a couple more hoops, so to speak. Now,
Sure.
for the kids, we regularly talk about the importance of giving and kind of why we do it, not just financially through BGMC, kind of like you mentioned, and here in the AG, which is that arm of really encouraging and challenging kids to give to missions worldwide. But even though that's a big part of it, but also the importance of giving in other ways. And something that I'm currently doing for BGMC that my kids are enjoying is I do a BGMC Country of the Week, which is just me going through there's a BGMC curriculum available on their on the BGMC website, and I adapt it in just a 5 minute or so segment that I'll have in my services. Kids learn some facts about a country, they learn about what BGMC does in that country. And then I'll challenge the kids to pray out loud for a couple different things in that country and other similar great resources that I've used in that kind of slot are the BGMC Sessions curriculum, which is another resource developed by the national office and the BGMC team. And each one of those lasts about 5 to 7 minutes and offers a great way to teach kids about BGMC and about giving. And then another great thing that kids always really respond to well is every time that a missionary comes to visit, if they want to have a brief window before they speak in the adult service to speak to the kids and tell them about what they do in their country, I'll ask that and have that conversation with them. And I rarely have a mission or I rarely have a missionary say no, and the kids always love it. Missionaries always love it, I think, talk about what they do with the next generation with kids. And then a few times throughout the year, I'll also have a number of sort of concentrated pushes and incentives that gets everyone involved. And the bigger ones that I most often do are focused around National BGMC Day, which is just coming up here pretty soon next week,
Yeah,
and then
for
Epic
sure.
Give Day in the fall. And in addition to some of our overall goals and incentives that I'll have for the kids throughout the year, I'll also have some goals and incentives for those specific pushes and campaigns. And this year, for example, one of the things I'm doing is a hot wing roulette, taking some of the hot sauces found on Hot Ones and including one of their junior sauces that are made specifically for kids and spinning a wheel, and I'll eat the wings with the sauce that it lands on. I've also done things like having the kids throw pies at my face, turning me into an ice cream sundae, and even throwing paintballs at me. Now, for the adults, I always try and promote what we are doing and what our project for the year is to them, getting them involved and partnering with us and helping them understand how important it is for them to be a model that their kids can see and follow when it comes to giving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, I think the word I would use to sum that up is just consistency, right? I mean, sometimes the difference between a passion getting shared and really dug into a kid's life is just how often it's presented to them. And I love how you said, hey, every service, every time a missionary shows up at these key events throughout the year, any way that I can personally sacrifice and be engaged. I mean, I love that model of consistency that you're operating in. So let's talk about your background a little bit. And this will probably dive into a little bit of your story, and I'll kind of let you lead the way in how you want to share it. But I know that we talked a little bit about effectively connecting with broken families, right? Those who Yeah, may not have two parents' presence or just have been through some trauma. And you talked about how your early life has kind of played into that, you know? And so as much as you want to, share with us the story of your life and how a pastor, really any pastor, but maybe, you know, a pastor can use their own experiences to connect with students who come from broken homes, you know?
Yeah, and I think the specifics of my story, which I'll kind of get into here momentarily, it matters, but the specifics I don't know necessarily matter as much. I think we all have our stories that the things that we go through, whether it's something I went through with kind of growing up in that broken home and through divorce, or whether you've been following God all of your life. I think a pastor has a story that God can use, no matter kind of what it is, to reach students and help them kind of see what God's done in their life. I think the kind of the specifics of a story, any story that someone has, can be effective in reaching someone for Jesus. But in my particular story growing up, I mean, my situation wasn't necessarily great, but I never suffered any form of abuse or anything like that. But my sure. mom had who I absolutely love, and today she is in a much better place. I think she's kind of figured some things out. But my mom growing up, she had some issues, and my dad obviously had issues as well. But I had went through, so by the time I had graduated high school, I had seen my mom go through three separate marriages. And then even by the time that I was born, the marriage that she had to my dad was her second. So currently she's gone through five marriages in my lifetime. And so the
wow.
seeing kind of that kind of cycle play out over and over again kind of throughout my life, it was definitely hard to see, kind of, because I could kind of tell, I mean, it's not something you want to be good at, but I got pretty good at kind of telling the trouble signs in any of my mom's marriages, kind of
sure.
like, oh, hey, this is happening again. This is kind of the cycle I've grown to become accustomed to and kind of expect. And so that kind of mindset really, for a long time, and there's definitely still some sort of ripple effects to that, but it definitely messed with me for a long time. And there were other issues that she had, but and my dad had with drinking and things like that, that kind of really didn't help any of those situations at all. But I think coming out of that, once I really sort of let God work with me through a lot of those situations and let God heal some of the hurts that were there, is when I was really able to start to see that the story that I have and the trauma and the things that I went through, that's when I really began to see that my story, although not great, it's something that God could use to help reach other people who may be going through a similar situation with that. And at least
sure.
here in over the last couple years, there's been definitely some families that I've been able to kind of connect with, and even some of the kids as well, those families that have gone through some of those similar situations.
Yeah. So just to highlight some of that for us, because I don't want any like secret formulas here, but like, if you said, hey, here's some things that have guided me well in connecting with families that struggle in this area, or maybe some pitfalls to avoid when kind of trying to reach in, because again, whenever you reach into a family that has that presence of brokenness, it can backfire pretty hard. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like if you care, quote unquote, the wrong way, it can cause more harm than good. And so is there anything that you can tell us, you know, something to avoid or something that just generally guides you when you get to interact with a family from a tough background?
Yeah. So when it comes to the kind of the parents, in a lot of situations, I don't necessarily handle the kind of the full kind of front of the situation. I mean, I'll be kind of aware of the status of certain things, but really I've been in communication with my pastor, and if it involves them, the youth pastor as well, just sure. saying, hey, what's the kind of the status of the family? What would be the appropriate time to kind of reach out to them? I think through that sort of communication you have with your team there, you'll kind of be able to kind of best kind of determine when would be able to, or when the best time would be be able to reach out and really in one of these situations, there's not necessarily a perfect time to talk with someone about that, but a resource that I was made aware of by Kelly Presson, the National Kidman Director for the AG, this book that I have kind of right here. It is The Switching Hour and the Kids of Divorce, Say Goodbye Again. And it's been a book that I think has challenged parents to in that situation, and how the the book is, it's walking through the different things that a kid in that situation thinks about. Hey, I'm with my mom right now, but here in a couple of days, I'm going to be dropped off and the switch is going to happen where I'm going to go with my dad or the other parent in reverse there. But it really helps parents understand the mindset of what their kids are walking through in that situation.
Oh, wow. We'll definitely throw a link to that book in the comments because it sounds like a good read.
Parents are, I don't think necessarily are going to be huge fans of yours for giving them that book, but it's definitely a resource that's been effective.
Well, and as a kids pastor, if you're looking for a book, I love learning, so just the chance of man, you could hear a perspective that you haven't before and maybe gives you that grace, that compassion. And I really love your team approach.
Definitely.
Obviously in discipling the whole family, you're not afraid to pull in multiple people to say, hey, how do we effectively come around a group of people, not just this kid or the parent or one of the other parents? It's a real thing. Well, let's dive into this last aspect that we're going to discuss of your story today. I know you mentioned to me again that you've had these different seasons in kids ministry, right? Because I think if there's something that someone could sympathize with in kids ministry, it would be the understanding that you always want volunteers and you don't always have volunteers. It's just one of the rules of trying to get a good kids ministry going. But you have talked about how you wrestled back and forth because some seasons you've been very self-sufficient and just tried to knock everything out and get it all done and do it all. And some seasons that's bitching the butt and you're like, hey man, I gotta form a team and I gotta dig into that. But there's other times where I think that even without a team, you mentioned to me that maybe the Lord sustained you through it. So just dive into that a little bit for us. How has the Lord helped you learn to delegate? But also how has the Lord helped you learn to endure when you're struggling maybe a little more alone,
Yeah. Now this has been, I think, one of the out of the many lessons I've learned in kids ministry. This may be one of the ones that's taken me longer than I would like to admit.
See, those are my favorite lessons to dive into, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the best ones.
Exactly.
So,
the importance of building a team and the right way to lead it. And it's still an area. And I think it'll probably continue to be an area that I find new challenges in as I go through different seasons of ministry. And early on in my ministry and when in Sublette, I definitely depended far too much on myself. And even though I was in a much smaller church, even than I'm in now, there was definitely, I think, more I could have done to foster a stronger team. But the team that I had there was amazing. And they were very understanding and gracious to me as, honestly, at times I learned on the fly, that being my first ministry position. It's definitely something I had a lot of grace from people in. Now, when I got to my current position, I stepped into a situation where my two main areas of ministry, kids and nursery, they felt so far apart. There was no real structure in either team, and the partnership between the two areas, as much as there should be one, was completely absent almost. And so out of necessity, during my first year there, which again was 2020, which was just such a fun year. It was
a wild time.
Was spent building those connections and partnerships. Now, overall, I think the first couple years here, they went really well. I more and more continued to learn about the importance of building relationships with the team and really figuring out how to lead it well. And in June of 2022, the church went through a pastoral transition, which thankfully it didn't become a prolonged search.
Good.
We had our new pastor by late November, early December of that year, 2022. But during that initial period of the transition, I saw a lot of people, and not just in kids, but really throughout the entire church, I saw a lot of people stepping away from serving for a number of reasons. And which is something that, at least in my experience, you see to some extent during any transition, you see people take a step back and wait to see how the dust settles, so to speak. And for a while, my excuse was that I didn't have as many team members that I was used to. So I was really able to start to depending on myself more. But and for a while, yeah, that was my excuse. I fell into some old habits that I had back in my first sort of ministry position.
Sure.
And now, though, I think we're in just a really good place, and not just in terms of me being in the kids, but as a church as a whole. And I'm not honestly sure where I'd want to be. And I think, kind of like you said, no matter how many team members and volunteers you have, there's always going to be the need for more. But I think the foundation has been laid, and I can see where we'll end up. We're not there yet, but I can definitely kind of see the vision. I can see kind of the path that we're on. And as long as I'm faithful to what God wants me to do, he'll take care of the rest. And that's kind of, you mentioned how God kind of sustained me through some of those times.
Talk to us about that.
That's been something kind of like I just said, I need to be faithful to sort of what God is asking me to do, and he'll take care of the rest. And even in those moments and seasons where it wasn't necessarily an excuse, but I definitely didn't have really anyone else helping me, it was depending on God, not myself, that sort of kind of got me through those particular periods, at least.
Yeah. So just to break it down to something really practical, if I said, hey, give us one practical way in which you feel like you are now leading your team well, what would be that practical point?
For me, and this is something that I definitely had to learn and to really do well, but figure out just the best way to kind of train and equip your team. Now, at first, especially in this current position that I'm in, at first, I didn't get much of a response in, for the trainings or really any of that. But I figured out over time just what kind of their needs were in that, what they needed to grow in the most, and really setting out clear expectations for them. Like, hey, this is what I'm going to need from you. And I'm not going to be super hard about it, but these are the expectations that I have. This is not something I'm asking you to do just without me also going to be meeting those, but really having those clear expectations set for them. And then also, like I just mentioned, really figuring out what effective training looks like for whatever your ministry context is.
Nice. Yeah. And I love that, because I think that sometimes we say, oh, we need training or we need to do that, and we try it, and if it tanks, it is just so easy to not try it again. You know what I'm saying? Where you're like, well, that was a dud, you know. Mm-hmm. But what I'm hearing from you is, hey, experiment until you dial in on what people are needing and how to like effectively equip them. And I really love that kind of pastoral heart. Well, sir, I just want to say, Pastor Cody, thanks for being on the podcast today, man. It's been a delightful discussion.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much. And I just hope that kind of what we talked about today, even if it helps just one person, that'll be awesome.
Yeah. And I think it will. You know, I've enjoyed our dive. I've enjoyed kind of different aspects of this we've looked at, and even you sharing, kind of your own story as the lens of it all. So, well, hey, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to say thanks again for tuning in. It is our hope every single week in and week out, to bring you content that speaks right where you're at as a rural leader. We hope that you're equipped and encouraged and inspired. Of course, you could do some of the normal things like check us out on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a rating or a review. But in the most rural of fashions, the easiest way for this podcast to spread is for one leader to just tell somebody, hey, there's some conversations I want you to check out and be a part of. So for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Cody Burnson, and we will see you next week.